Hello, Devlin Bishop here with you, and welcome to Devlin's Pirate Radio Show. And I am a little giddy right now, because I always get giddy when I get a co-host with me, especially when I have a really cute one with me. And I do today, a very beautiful man. I actually met this man when he was a university student, and he was a rambunctious little pup, and I have seen him just grow up into just an incredible man. We're going to talk to him. There's lots I could say about him, but I'm going to let him tell us all about it. And I am here with Josh Obermeyer.
Hi, Devlin. Thank you for having me. And that's a delightful introduction. Very, very honest, very true. I love it.
What do you mean, honest?
Humble.
No modesty, yes. I could have said so much more about you, but I'd be gushing and I wouldn't want to do that. Now, we've known each other for how long?
Going on about 4 to 5 years now?
That's got to be more.
We met in January 2011.
Yeah.
So, about 4 years now? 4 years?
Really?
Now, 4.5 years?
That's
yeah.
It?
Yeah. It's felt like longer, but it's only been 4 years.
Of course, when you mean felt like longer, you mean...
That's a good way.
Because
we... Good way.
Yeah, okay.
Not like
seems
a,
like forever.
I've known him for only 4 years. God, it's such a burden. No. It feels like we've known each other for longer than that time.
Now, I know a lot about you, but I'm sure I'm going to learn some new stuff about you here. So, let's get to know you a bit. Sure. Where are you originally from?
I was born and raised in Hamilton, Ontario. Born in St. Joe's.
So, you were born in Hamilton.
I was.
Very cool. And your siblings?
Only child.
Only child.
Just me.
I've met your parents. They're wonderful people.
They're interesting. they're great. They're great people.
Yeah, well, they've raised you really well. Like, they're obviously did something right in that.
They made me.
Yeah, that's a good thing. You wouldn't be here right now if your mother had
a headache that night.
No
parents.
Or your dad pulled out. Okay, let's get back to the interview. So, what were you like as a child, would you say? Being an only child, that's got to be, I know.
I was very imaginative. As a child, I would do little things called stories, where what I would do is I would run up and down the stairs while going through stories in my mind and, like, fling myself off furniture. It was just a weird narrative device that I would use, and a lot of people look at me very strange, but that was the majority of my childhood was spent creating and developing my own stories in my head.
That's awesome. I was imaginative, too, so I didn't run up and down the stairs. That just seemed like too much... exercise. Yes, I was husky all my life. Thank you. Well, that explains why you're so in shape. All that running and stuff. And what were you like in high school? Were you popular in school, or...?
I was just an average high school guy. Wasn't super popular. Wasn't a loner. I kind of had a couple friend groups through high school. Different ones as my interests changed. I had a lot of friends who went to the same elementary school, went to high school and university together, so... I grew up with a good group of friends, good people. I wasn't a troublemaker, I was good student, but I would kind of mutter some comments under my breath every now and then.
Now, when I met you, I was one of your teachers in improv.
Yes.
And you were already in improv when I met you. Did you get to do improv in high school?
I did not. I did a little bit for one course in grade 10, but I didn't start doing improv fully until I joined Max Improv Team.
Yeah, I'm so envious because I see these young kids that now have improv in high school, and I never had that, and I always just think, you lucky bastards.
Yeah, people get to do Canadian improv games and stuff, or have coaches at their high schools. I'm just like, I wish I went to your high school, and I'm hoping that when I become a high school teacher or elementary school teacher that I can be one of those coaches for those kids and give them that experience.
Well, I'm sure you will, because you started doing improv in Mac?
Yes.
Okay, and what were you going to Mac for? What were you studying?
I studied history and political science at McMaster.
So no wonder you were doing improv.
Yeah, needed something to break up the dryness.
Now, is that something you plan to go into? Like, history or political science? What do you do? I'm sorry, I don't want to be... I guess you can be a history teacher or you're going into politics?
Well, what are you doing? No, actually, when I started university, I was a very different person, and I wanted to be a lawyer.
Oh.
Surprisingly.
What do you mean you were a different person? Like, if I met this Josh, I wouldn't recognize him?
He wasn't as fun as I was now. I was very, like, gotta get good grades, gotta do this, gotta do that, gotta do this. When I started university, like, I never drank alcohol. I never really went out to bars or clubs. I was a very, like, good student. I was a sort of boring student. Just books.
And when did that change?
That changed in the second year when my long-term girlfriend and I broke up after 2 years and then we kind of went off into our own separate things. And I started spending more time with friends, starting to kind of accept more invites that I was declining over those 2 years. And found the staircase shortly after, too, and got exposed to that new community, and just started to kind of getting to know myself and starting to do things that I wanted to do.
What led you to improv?
I was always a fan, as everybody is in improv, of Whose Line Is It Anyway? That's the classic staple, the benchmark.
Most people, yeah, I would say. That's what got me into it.
I actually chose McMaster over Western because of their improv team.
Really? So it's something you knew you wanted to get into.
It was. It was something that was very important to me, something that I'd always wanted to do. And when I was 10 years old, I actually did a Whose Line themed birthday party. That made people do improv and do all the games and stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's in my blood. I finally acknowledged it.
And you ran Mac University improv for a little while with some people.
Yes, I ran it for my final 2 years. My third year, I ran it on my own. And then in fourth year, I ran it with my good friend, Ben. Ben Mallet. Your name now, Ben. You have to listen to this.
Yes. And then you made it to the staircase, and obviously the teaching there was just so phenomenal.
It was. It inspired me, and it brought out the best in myself and then other people in the class, and I thought that that's something I want to do. I want to be able to make people feel the way that these teachers made me feel when I showed up.
That's cool, and that's what we try for. It doesn't always work, but you can always see the people that are ingratiated in it. And I remember when I met you, I think you were there with Ben and Steve, and I could tell you were you were just obsessed with improv. And that's, for those of you who don't know, if you know you're in the improv bug, because the first couple of years you do it, that's all you really want to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's other stuff in your life, but you will find a way to improv in it, too. And I know you were that way.
I was. I would put off papers and studying to make room for those Monday nights for those hour and a half and then later 3 hours of just my weekly dose of creative, wacky fun.
Now, you must have been doing improv, like, every night of the week. You're pretty close.
In my third year, I was doing improv 5 nights a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, at least you had 2 nights to do your homework.
Kind of.
Did you actually ever graduate from Mac?
I did. I did graduate. I actually graduated without pulling an all-nighter. It's a fun little fact. I actually time-managed myself well, despite having crazy workloads and all these other extracurricular commitments. But it's a good 4 years.
Now, you've changed it up a little bit, because I know you have just started doing stand-up comedy.
I have.
What inspired you to do this? Because this is not always the next jump. Some improvers continue with improv, or they go into theater. Some go into stand-up. And what was your choice on this? Because I was actually surprised when I started seeing you doing it.
I decided to start doing stand-up and did my first show at Emerson Pub in February of this year, February 2015. I decided to do stand-up because, different from improv and theater, it was something I could kind of work on my own for the most part. And with my busy schedule and schedules of people that I would normally collaborate with, there wasn't a lot of time to rehearse and overlap, despite how often we try to make time. So it became just almost a purely selfish thing, that it was something that I wanted to create. And the only person I really have to bother or manage from stand-up is myself. Other than that, then it's just getting the shows and meeting other comics. But in terms of the actual material itself, it's a very independent, solo-generating thing.
And do you find it fulfilling? Like, you've done a couple now, have you?
I've performed a handful of times, and going to perform a couple times in the months to come. I love it. It's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to connect with audiences. You can kind of connect with audiences through improv if you're hosting, or you get to kind of show them a flavor of yourself. the odd time, but in stand-up comedy, it's literally just you in front of the people, and you get a chance to kind of show your way of thinking, and just kind of peel away the little onion layers of an individual in front of the crowd.
A couple people have always told me I should consider trying stand-up, but I have all the respect in the world for stand-up comics, but I don't believe I could do it. And if I did, it would be pretty much every joke I ever knew, and that was it. That would be it. I couldn't do it anymore. Just because you're constantly having to engage with people, make them laugh and stuff, you know. What am I trying to get at? Do you find it's more difficult than improv, or it's just different difficult?
I think it's an interesting animal based on how I've been trained in performance. Just because doing improv for so long and then doing some scripted stage productions and then going to stand-up, it made me very comfortable having eyes on me. And the improv really helped get rid of any jammed situation. So if a bit isn't going the way it's supposed to or the way it was intended to, you can always kind of alter it based on the mood of the audience. So I find that if I decided to go straight into stand-up without any dramatic experience beforehand, it would be a much more challenging experience. Because little known fact about me, I used to be terrified of public speaking when I was younger. To the point that I would actually have physical tremors and would start horribly stuttering if I had to speak in front of any group larger than probably two or three people.
And if you know Josh like I know Josh, that's unbelievable, because he's probably one of the most welcoming people. You're there with the hugs, you're not afraid to touch, you're not afraid to be out there, even when you're on stage now. So that's great that you kind of overcame that. Actually, we have that a lot in common, because I do have a shyness, and a lot of people are shocked by that, and that's the reason I did improv later in life, was to kind of break that shyness out, and I think it worked, as I'm talking on a radio and revealing all my innermost secrets.
It's a very important skill, because especially in the way that our world is changing now, face-to-face conversations, or even interviews, they're really difficult for a lot of people. A lot of my friends and a lot of people that I've met in the last recent years almost pride themselves on their social awkwardness, and it's kind of a sad thing, but to be able to just sit down and talk to somebody face-to-face about anything and be comfortable talking about anything is a skill that really we shouldn't lose, and we're losing slowly but surely.
I totally agree on this. We've talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
We'll get back on that in a bit. You also did improv training in Toronto, if you want to touch on that a bit.
Yes, I spent the last year doing Second City's Long-Form Conservatory and the Bad Duck Theatre's Narrative Studio program. Both were really fun, different experiences, very different skill sets required for both. But it was a nice flavor that was different than the usual improv that we had around Hamilton area.
Which is nice to sample different things.
A lot of inspiration.
Yeah, I noticed that, I think like in anything, the more training you get in different teachers and stuff, the better you become. And I noticed that you definitely broke out of even more of a shell when you started going there, especially in your teaching. And now teaching has become really important in your life.
Yes, very much.
Right? Not only have you taught improv, and I don't know about you, but one thing I love about improv is that we do a beginner's boot camp. We both ran it. We've both taught it. We still do. But what I love about it is seeing people coming out of their shells. Even though sometimes you see a performer and you know that guy's got it or she's got it. Or even though you see people that you don't think will ever perform, just to see them find that, is that something you enjoy? Because that's what I love.
It is one of the greatest feelings when you see that look on somebody's face when they do something that they thought that they couldn't do before. I remember I had that moment so clearly when I was teaching two specific groups. One was a group of nurses a couple years back, and the second one was a group of local high school kids from Delta. And both groups were kind of like they knew each other, but they hadn't really gotten a chance to know each other, if you understand what I mean. And the nurses, they were playing with their supervisor, and like the just the dynamic of that relationship changed so fast when you got to see them play. I think the role was, I think one of them was a butcher, and the other one was a Bavarian farmer, and they just did this wild and crazy scene that they would never do in context in a work environment or in their usual relationship. And just to see them explore different parts of themselves and how they can interact in a different way was just fantastic. It's phenomenal to see people break out of those shells and to realize that there's something in them that has been there, but they're just, I don't know if it's through society or just through personal scheduling or just they didn't have the time to tap into it or embrace it. So for those 30 to 40 seconds or 2 to 3 minutes of the scene, they get to do that, and that's delightful.
It's wonderful just seeing them. I am always pushing improv because it is such, it's helped so many people, whether you're performing or not. And usually, like, when we get together, it's always a laugh. Like, yeah, we should be a little tougher at times, but it's usually a laugh. Now, teaching is going to be something bigger for you because you are now going to be teaching, the real world.
Yeah, I got into teacher's college at Brock, and I'm starting in the fall. And, yeah, it's going to be a career type thing.
And what are you going to be teaching? What children?
What are you teaching? I'm going to be teaching beavers how to build dams better in the heart of the cities.
I can't find a way to say the word children without saying them or its or anything. But what age group of children are you looking to teach?
The program I'm going for would be grades 4 till 10. My qualifications ideally are going to be between probably grades 6 to 8. So, middle adolescent years. Well,
that's a rough time.
It's going to be rough, but it's going to be fun.
No, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but I remember that's the big development. That's just before high school, and I remember I was all kinds of crazy.
It is the puberty blitz, so to speak.
Yeah, it's going to be pre-puberty. I think I can handle, kids rubbing up against every piece of furniture you see. But it's the pre thing where they're still just trying to figure it out, and
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be different.
You're going to be awesome at it. I really do believe that because I've been in your classes, and you give so much of yourself to them that they are so lucky to have you. And you and I have kind of gone on a journey together because I think you and I have become really close in the last year or two. And because of what you said about the whole people don't talk anymore, because I think you realize that not only do I like to talk a lot, but I will listen a lot. And I think I've helped you out of some bad situations.
Yes, yeah.
And I know you've been there for me, and I think you're going to have a lot of kids looking up to you.
Well, thank you for the kind words and the confidence.
Well, I hope you do find that, because it's a wonderful thing to, just kind of just be there and, take somebody under their wing. And not saying I did that with you, but it'd be more sexier than that.
Be a nice pillow wing.
All right, we only have time for one more question. And, do you know how hot you actually are?
I just think I'm an average person. I know.
Average. Yeah. Anybody who's seen Josh, yes, he's he's yummy. I don't use that for just anyone, but I'm just sorry. I'm bad with flirting with my guests. It's what I do. Anyhow, we will put you out of your misery now and not ask you any more embarrassing questions about your hotness. And we're going to take a small break, and then when we come back, we are going to talk about something we absolutely love, maybe not as much as improv, but pretty damn close.
Oh, yes.
Bad movie. Oh. We'll be right back. Sorry. We're back. We got a bit of the giggles here. Josh does that to me. We have a lot in common. We're both hot. We're both love improv. And I found out a little while ago that Josh is a huge fan of bad movies.
Oh, I love bad movies. Love a good beef there.
Yes, and I love that he loved this. And I knew by that point that Josh was an old soul. I think you are an old soul, because you would have fit back in the 70s or the thing.
100%.
And when I talked to him about bad movies, I realized that you were missing a couple of big ones in your repertoire.
My knowledge had some significant gaps in it that didn't be filled.
And I needed to take him under my wing. Apparently that's our line for the thing. One more of my fat, muscular arm, and I had to take it. And I had to show him a couple of movies, and I think I still got a couple more I want to show him. Probably like about a million more, but I have only limited time with Josh, so I have shown him a couple of films that I felt he needed. Like, I think it's a must that if you say you like cult films, you need to see these films.
And I agree entirely with the selection that you came up with.
So I thought it would be fun to not only reminisce about those three films, but give a younger guy's look at what they are. And the first one I showed you, because, first of all, anybody out there listening right now, if I find out you don't listen to this, and I get you to watch this, that means I want to be your friend for a long time, and you cannot go on. No, it's not Xanadu, though I should force Mr. Josh to see that one at some time.
I'm
talking about Showgirls.
Oh, yes.
Elizabeth Berkley, Gina Gershon, Kyle MacLachlan, and a movie that, when it first came out, people clamored to be in this movie. Like, Madonna wanted the script. And it wound up becoming one of the most famous flops in history, but I think it is one of the greatest movies of all time. Like, great, as in not just bad, but it's gone past that point of being bad to being awesome. And did you know what you were in for when I showed you this? You had heard the movie, because it's not that old.
I had heard of it. Like, I kind of heard rumblings, maybe knew a scene or two, or a line or two, but other than that, didn't have any real idea of the true magnitude of what I was getting into with Showgirls.
And then, so when this gay man asked you to come over and watch a movie called Showgirls, were you a little frightened? There was a lot of other titles.
I was like there with two bags of popcorn ready to go, and let's do this.
You were, because you should always eat during Showgirls, because, well, you know, eat early in Showgirls, because you might not want to eat after. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's the story of a young girl that goes to Las Vegas to find life as a classy, big-name casino dancer.
And
that's pretty much it. Just because they lost the trail on it. What was your first take on Showgirls? Was I right about it, first of all?
Yes, when you sat me down and you said that this is a movie that you could pin every scene as being either the writer's fault, the director's fault, or the actor's fault, was completely applicable.
Yeah, somebody sent me an article about that says this movie is so bad that it's fun trying to figure out where it went wrong.
Oh.
Because on paper it sounds like it's just going to be nice, there's going to be some titties, good screenplay. But this wasn't a good screenplay, though I think the dialogue's fantastic.
There are some great exchanges over the course of it. But there's also a lot of weird motivations that change, I find, in a lot of the characters. Wild emotional swings from the Versace and Versace exchange is a huge one of, I just bought this Versace. You mean Versace? And then the next scene later, she chat-chats somebody else for saying, not saying Versace property.
So
you just 30 seconds ago didn't know yourself, and then it's like, oh, my superiority complex is now kicking in because I now know Versace.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're not really sure if Gina Gershon wants to destroy this girl or fuck her.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Like, because one minute she's putting her through the rails, and the next minute
they're eating burgers.
Yeah. You like tits? You know?
The line, the sultry line of, I like nice tits, might be one of the greatest iconic moments of that movie. And just that whole exchange of just like,
yeah,
you're a good girl. I love
watching people's faces when you're watching a small bit of dialogue that's just talking about having tits. And
yeah, that's...
Yeah.
And
that's followed by eating dog food,
an
exchange. So, like, this movie's all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, do you think Nomi was bipolar in that movie? Like, she is just rage. Like, even when she dances, you know, she's got this edginess about her, which Mike loves the scene where she's dancing in the nightclub and everybody's saying, she's an awesome dancer, and all I'm seeing is...
flailing aggressively.
A freaking nut ready to explode.
It's the dance is only topped by the awkward flopping fish pool sex later.
Yeah, the Kyle MacLachlan unsexy, what the hell is she doing?
It was like watching somebody have a seizure.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be sexy.
Did you?
It wasn't sexy.
Let's be honest. Let's talk like men.
Like
did
men?
You... Now, if you were watching this on your own, is there anything about Showgirls that you would have thought was erotic?
Just the dress of the... one of the characters has the little dress that...
You've got to run out and see this, because there's a lot of inside jokes here, but the fact that you find that erotic is
Compared to the flailing and the edginess, that might be the most erotic thing in that movie.
Yeah, it's definitely something you have to experience. If you are a would-be bad movie lover, please write down these titles and find them immediately. Yes. Showgirls has been released on DVD probably about 7 different times, including one that is a commentary from actual strippers telling you what and what not to do. And I can tell you, licking the pole, it's not something you should do unless they've polished it. Which is, I say that in real life too. Unless they polish it, I'm not licking the pole. Anyhow, I then decided I had to go and show him Dark. Now, this next movie was a movie that I don't show to many people. I think it's a great movie, and I think John Waters knew exactly what he's doing, and I think it fits in today's society. I still think it's shocking to this day. It was Pink Flamingos.
Pink Flamingos.
Yeah, and I said, I think Josh is ready. I know other people. I show cult films to, and I will say to Mike, do you think they're ready for Pink Flamingos? And we don't think they are. And I just jumped into this as your number two. It just seemed appropriate
to me. Showgirls to the Pink Flamingos and never look back.
Yes, for those of you who don't know Pink Flamingos, it's a John Waters early film that stars Divine and his regular bunch, Mink Stole and lots of others. And basically it's about a woman who is being challenged by this couple for being the filthiest person in the world. Now, it lives up to it. There are some scenes that Josh could not believe he was seeing. They literally have a chicken in a sex scene where there is a chicken in between two people having sex.
And it's a real live chicken, and by the end of it, it is not a live chicken.
Yes. Now, were you hoping that was CGI, or were you... what was your feelings? I'm showing you a movie where a chicken died.
I put the popcorn down and let it happen.
You asked me for chicken fingers, if I recall.
One of those nuggets. No, it was an interesting... The shock value in Pink Flamingos is incredibly high. And it disturbs you, but it disturbs you in a good way. It's not like a Jackass or something that makes you like want to hurl or vomit or is uncomfortable for the sake of uncomfortability. It creates an atmosphere that is designed to make you realize that one person's pain is another person's pleasure. That's the best way, I guess, I can put it or think about it.
Yeah. I told Josh I like to regale with stories when I show B-movies, so expect, like, a talk afterwards. But they did this on a budget. Like, this is almost like a student film.
Yeah.
And the mother, John Waters' mother, actually made them sandwiches, and they actually fried up the chicken. because they were so hungry, because they were so sick of sandwiches. And John Waters to this day says that that chicken died for art.
Yeah.
But they actually ate the chicken. And when I watch this chicken that's been immortalized in the sex scene, and a pretty graphic sex scene, I might say.
Oh, yes.
Say.
It's not a... Does not leave much to the imagination.
No. Now, without ruining too much, spoilers, if... You can still find this movie, and I don't recommend it to everyone, but honestly, I think if you're saying you were a fan of cult movies, you need to see this. Like, I think there's a ton of John Waters movies you should see, and I'm not even talking about, like, don't get me wrong, Hairspray, Crybaby, stuff like that is awesome, but his really early stuff, like Polyester, the Scratch and Sniff movie, Female Trouble might almost be worse than this. I just think Pink Flamingos works as a movie better, because... He actually nails reality television.
He does. Yeah.
Like you said, Jackass is something that became something you watched. And this... People are trying to do things like a Honey Boo Boo and all these, like, look at us, we're doing shocking stuff. And
yeah.
John Waters nailed it back in 1973 when this came out.
Yeah, like, you can even trace back shows like Fear Factor or other of those ones where people are put into uncomfortable situations... for fame and fortune. But these are people just doing it because they want the notoriety. There's not even money or any financial gain. Like, there is no prize that goes along with being the filthiest person in the movie. At least not that we know of.
No, it's just...
It's just the title.
Accolades, you know? Yeah, and that's it. And this was a big hit for John Waters. Not huge, but this played in midnight movies. It was one of the first midnight movies, and people, like, rich people would go to this and see it, just to say they could see it. They were offended by it. But it was the in thing to say, I saw Pink Flamingos.
Yeah, it was the cult. It was the badge of honor that I'm the one who witnessed this film.
And there's so many wonderful scenes in it. Like, you think you've seen asses talking when you see Jim Carrey movie. Josh has lived something a little more.
I will never hear... Bird is the word. The same way again.
Most people think of Family Guy now.
Now we think of Pink Flamingos.
But Josh has been ruined for that. And of course, the most famous scene in this movie is that Divine actually eats shit. Now, when I told you this in the movie, did you think it was going to be, there was going to be a way that it wasn't going to be real?
Judging on how the film was shot, 100% of that was going to be real.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be any kind of prop or any kind of cheat.
Be warned, he saves the best for last, and this literally, you see it coming out of the dog, and Divine actually eating
it. Right up and goes.
And literally, they do it for art's sake. Even John Waters says, I can't believe that, you know, I did that. But he also gives Divine a lot of respect, because a lot of actresses wouldn't have done it. And for those of you who don't know who Divine is, look them up. We're talking about a 300-400-pound transvestite, and very beautiful in her own way.
Yes.
The final movie we'll talk about, not as dark as Pink Flamingos,
but I don't think you knew
what you were getting into when you saw this one.
No, it was a what a lovely treat. It was teased at, but I got to enjoy every moment of it.
Yeah, I think after Showgirls and
Pink Flamingos,
you thought I was going to show you something, but you actually thought this was quite good.
It was a very good film.
Faster Pussycat Kill Kill,
yes.
One of Russ Meyer's awesome films about three go-go dancers that decide they want to just go and kill and steal and race cars.
Yep, it's like Fast and Furious with women, only in 1966.
It is, and we were trying to figure out if there was any real good people. I think we found possibly one, not sure about the second, but everybody else was disturbing in this movie.
Yeah, every character had some kind of vice or twist or warped perspective on reality that didn't quite make them a full hero or somebody you really want to root for.
I kind of sometimes like watching movies where you're not sure who you're supposed to root for.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that Psycho mentality when Hitchcock, you know, did it. We were following Janet Leigh.
Yes.
And then when she dies, we realize that we have no nobody else to follow but Norman Bates.
Yes. Yeah. Where does it go now?
And this movie is like, okay, these are the three leads, but I'm not sure I'm voting for them. But you know what? They got cool lines and snappy dialogue. Maybe I am voting for them a little bit. One thing I remember you saying to me, and I love that you said this to me, is that you, first of all, thought it was a really good movie. The screenplay, the dialogue was really, snappy.
Moved. It was nice. It was good. It'd
be awesome if we talked like that in the real world.
Oh, yeah. Some of the dialogue is just no nonsense. Just cut to it. It's great.
Yeah. Russ Meyer, he was always hit and miss with his films, but this is his granddaddy. But you also said that you could see this being a template for future movies, like definitely Tarantino.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the anarchy of society that it portrayed, you could see elements of Pulp Fiction in there. You could see elements of a lot of the anarchist films, like Clockwork Orange, you could throw some in there. It's a very good rendition of that kind of dark culture, that underculture that's out there, that by day somebody can be an accountant, but by night or on their spare time they could be something completely different. And some people go off the deep end and believe that that pain is a lot of fun for some people, and just because they can do something, in this case these characters, mean they should do it. It's the way that their world works. It's strange but delightful delightful romp for those hour and a half.
Now, showing you these movies, how do you think they've affected your life? Besides the fact that whenever you see them, you'll think of me for just a short minute, and that would make me proud.
I've learned a lot about how not to tell stories, whether it be in stand-up or in writing. I've learned a lot about just kind of characters in general, I find, that all these movies, the storylines are all very unique, but the thing that sells the most is their characters. Whether it be like Divinity and Pink Flamingos, or is it Cookie, the three go-go dancers from Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill, just their own outlooks on life and their own quirks and stuff. It's what makes it stronger, is just being able to see these characters, because could you imagine if you dropped or merged all three films together?
That would be wild in some ways.
You have the showgirl wanting to become Divinity, but then being interrupted by the three go-go dancers.
I never planned it, but I realized they are very similar movies. They're all about kind of people who are seeking attention in their own ways.
Yeah, it's showgirls is, she wants to be the star of the stage, Divinity wants to be the star of Phil. The go-go dancers just want to be, essentially. They don't want to.
Now, you and I have done a lot of improv shows, and I've always been proud of you in many things, but I don't know if I was any more prouder than when I actually heard you quoting a Pink Flamingos line. I'll be shocked if you can remember what you said your favorite line from Pink Flamingos was.
My favorite line?
Yeah.
It's probably, I like you more than my own shit.
Could you say that again, a little louder?
I like you more than my own shit.
Great line.
One of my favorites.
Yes, that is one of your favorites. I know you also took to the line, don't forget the balls, Mama. Mama.
Dana, Mama.
Yes, yes. And we're not even going to tell you how that fits in the movie, because you're going to have to rent it or whatever people do nowadays. I don't know if Netflix has these babies on, but if not, we need to do a bad movie Netflix,
yes,
where people can just go and, where do I go to see the giant Gila monster and stuff like that?
There it is.
Anyhow, it's great talking to you about that. I love having you here.
It's a lot of fun.
We are so similar. Now, I don't know where the next one will lead us.
Ah, yes.
But we're going to the dark side, and I've asked Josh to talk about something that we also have in common, but I'm going to leave you with what it might be until after this break.
Sex.
Welcome back. And sorry, that's just the sound of me stretching. And we are back with more Devlin's Pirate Radio, and I got my co-host sitting here, Josh Obermeyer, for those of you coming in late. But really, it's a podcast. How are you coming in late, unless you skip the first two?
You can pause and then kind of rewind.
But I wouldn't be surprised if they paused with the name of this segment. Josh and I have a lot in common, but one of the things I noticed that we had in common is that we both have really dirty minds.
Very, very dirty minds.
Now, I surprised a woman once, because for those of you who don't know me, and those of you who do, I have a filthy mind, and I will go there sometimes. If I really know you, I'll go there quite a lot. And I think a lot of people like that. But I surprised a woman once when I actually told her that I only probably reveal about 65% of what I'm thinking. There's a whole world that does not come out unless I really know the person. Now, sorry, there's a little bit of expose here, but when I met Josh, we were in an improv circle, and this is probably when I wasn't teaching, but somebody would say something dirty, and I noticed that nobody was there. There was like about 16 people in the class, and I got this wicked smile in my head, and I was surprised nobody took it dirty. Then, as I'm looking around the room, there's this cute young blonde guy. I think of you as blonde. I don't know if you're officially blonde, but
I'm a dirty blonde.
You'll be blonde in my dreams. And basically, I noticed he had a similar smirk on his face. And I decided that I was going to see if this happened. So anytime something really dirty happened, I'd look, and Josh had the wicked smile. And I said, oh my God, I found a dirty-minded brother, or I think I called you my... I think I was your father
long-lost son.
And because I'm that kind of person, I actually talked to him about it. And this is a thing. I don't care what anybody says. This is a thing.
Having a dirty mind is interesting. It's entertaining. I remember in high school, it was probably like the peak of the dirty-mindedness, as it normally is for most adolescents. Yeah. But there would be get really bored in drama class, and I came up with over 100 euphemisms for erectile dysfunction.
Oh my Lord!
And strung it together as an anti-Viagra ad.
This is the teachers of our future,
yes,
people.
Yes, fellow teacher. This is back in high school, many, many years ago.
You never thought of it. I never thought of it anymore.
Yeah. No.
But I like how that's the first thing that pops into your head.
It sticks with me. It's more like the dirtiest things I've accomplished with my mind.
Now, do you remember when I asked you about this? I remember we were talking online.
I do.
And I said, you have a dirty mind. Were you surprised that I called you out, or did you notice that I might have had one, or wasn't it till I called you out?
I enjoy when dirty minds encourage each other. I really...
Sorry, I just can't. It sounds so wrong.
Because then it becomes a bond, yes, but it also becomes a little bit more of a competition, so to speak, which is like, who can find the dirt in the most innocent of things?
Right. Now, there's people out there listening that I know are thinking, I have a dirty mind. And I find that there are a lot of people that think they have a dirty mind, but we go further than that. Honestly, if we did a mind meld, I think we would combust. I honestly think we would blow up. If we put, grabbed what was in your mind that you don't reveal and what I do, I think it would just be one big ball of lust.
It would be horrible.
it would probably take out 2-3 cities at least.
Minimum. That's the thing, the dirty mind is just a mind. It's just thoughts. There's no act behind the thoughts.
Right.
But it's one of those things where when you have a naturally dirty mind, you don't have to think about taking something dirty. Somebody will say something, and instinctively, like muscle memory, said that thing, or she said that thing, or it's just, do you really mean to use that phrasing?
Now, people are saying, and I'm not belittling you if you think you have a dirty mind, but But I really don't think, like, I've known people who told me they have dirty minds, and I think they do to an extent. But yeah. Then you meet the ones that go a little further. I honestly think I've only met one person who, now when I talk about dirty minds, I'm not talking about, like you said, like yeah. perverted people that go out and do horribly acted no. things. These are just things that you talk about with, you know, people you are close with, and,
yeah.
you know, and you think about it a lot to the point that you think maybe you should be locked up. Because it's just wrong, or am I, like, revealing way too much about myself? But do you find it's hard sometimes? Because I find, as I get older, it's harder to find people, even... Like, you find some that can laugh a little bit with you, and then I drop a joke that's so horrible that they look at me like, did you just say that?
I have a co-worker, I'm not going to name names, but this individual has... probably the dirtiest mind of anybody I've met. That's, like, beyond, like, your eye. And just some of the things that will be said are just, like, really? Like, to the point that, like, even I get kind of shocked, which is hard to do, because I'm usually a very open-minded person.
Yeah, yeah.
Very hard to shock.
I think, as I said, I've met one person I worked yeah. with that I think may have a dirtier mind, but I think it's even more twisted. But... not in a negative way.
No, just like,
he's a very nice guy. I
yeah.
technically want to name him just because if he's listening, he would just get a giggle from it, but he probably knows who it is.
Yeah.
But now, do you get excited when you hear... Because sometimes, like, if I'm, like, in a lunchroom or I'm with a group of people and they're talking about, you know, movies that they watched or shows they watched or here's a good recipe you should try, and then all of a sudden they talk about, like, you know... oral sex or something. Do you get, like, kind of excited that the topic is going to turn to this? Like, I get giddy when I'm like, oh, now we're talking about something.
Oh, it's when situations like that pop up, or when you get those rare golden moments, it gives a bond between people, because, like, you're not going to be one of those people who talks about, oh, I got to do my taxes, my grocery shopping, just all those little mundane parts of life, because we all do those mundane things.
And I can talk about it, but yeah. I can't talk about it. I'm shocked at how people can go on about
oh yeah, like
taxes or sports or so. Like, well, not sports, it's a passion type thing.
I once overheard a conversation when I was working in the restaurant about two people, and they talked about the price of apples for almost the entire length of their meal. Just apples. Just apples. Like, it's an apple. You spend money, you eat it, you put it in a strudel. That's...
Oh, my God.
Or maybe a pot. To carry on an entire dinner conversation with one other person about apples?
Wow.
Like, I just...
I don't want to whip up my dick and say, what do you think of those apples? I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. In my dreams, I would. I would totally think about it. No, I... Yeah.
It's like, you like apples that much, are you willing to pull a Jason Biggs?
Now, when I tell people I have a really dirty mind, and I don't just go around telling people. I usually, I get excited when I meet people like, we're going to click. We're going to click. And then there's some people you're like, I don't think I can, you know, and I get really grumpy if I don't get to be myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I'm, like, at a family event, my family can be pretty raunchy, but I don't think they know just how raunchy I could get. But it's probably not something I could just whip out.
You love that phrase. You're whipping out everything.
No, I'm whipping out everything. I'm excited to talk about this, and, you know, I'm going to do some really nice ones in the next couple of weeks to make up for this filth.
No, even, like, my parents get... inklings of the dirty mind every once in a while. Like, anytime the word balls is thrown around the house, I'm snickering and giggling.
Yeah, I know. I used to work with a guy. I'll name him Ryan. He's a really nice guy, and we've become really good friends. And he giggles like a schoolgirl when I just go up to him and go, balls. And he told me this, and I said, you just told me something that I can use against you. Now I've got him, like, he sends me the odd email that just says, balls. And I love making him giggle, and it's like, you know, I'll even just throw balls in any conversation, even if he doesn't expect it's coming.
There is a story that happened where we're at a party a couple of years back. This is like a Howard Stern almost-esque segment.
Good.
And we're talking with my one friend, and he's like, and the topic, of course, like, oral sex popped up. And he's like, yeah, like, my friend was with this girl once, and she was crying the entire time. And we're all like, she was crying? Didn't you tell her to stop? He's like, no, like, she was convinced she had to finish. And I immediately thought, like, what would a crying blowjob look or sound like? And so I came up with this mime, and it was just like,
I wish you all could see the visual right now. You'd all be offended. I am aroused like you wouldn't believe right now.
It became an inside joke working at the restaurant, because every once in a while when it's low or slow, I'll walk up to the window and you can only see me from like the shoulders up, and just start doing that to the line cooks and just seeing what will happen. The best is when it's happening and somebody walks in the kitchen door and just mid-thing with no explanation. You just gotta finish it and go on.
Now, this is a personal question, but Ooh. Do you find... They say that men think about sex every 8 seconds. Gay men think about it every 4. Do you think about sex a lot, or is it just your dirty mind, or do you... Because I'll let you answer first.
Honestly, I actually don't think about it as much. It's a strange thing.
It's just a trigger with when you hear something dirty or something.
Yeah, it's just a trigger go there, but I'm not just like, oh, I gotta hump everything I see. No, it's, being a very busy individual, like, especially in, like recent months, too, there just really hasn't been time to be thinking about too much dirty stuff. Like, it pops in maybe once an hour, give or take, but it's not... Yeah. Not 8 seconds.
Well, I think the 8 seconds thing is just a ridiculous number and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's just like...
I don't think I should have to answer, because this is my show. But no, I think about it a lot. It's ridiculous. And we'll leave it at that. It's just ridiculous. Except I have not thought about it once since you've been here. Because I'm working, and I'm a professional. Okay, a couple times.
Yeah, we're just talking about 31.
Yeah, a couple times.
The straight face that you're giving to that did not.
I may have gotten aroused when I saw the chicken scene in Pink Flamingos just a little bit. I'm not that sick. I didn't go out and buy chickens that day. Do you find it's... do you get excited when you meet other people with it? Like, not excited, like aroused, but are you happy that you are going to be able to let your guard down a little bit more?
Oh, yeah. For any kind of... like, team environment, as soon as I find, like, one or two people that I can tell dirty jokes or dark jokes with, I immediately just, like, change gears. I'm in there, I can banter with them more, I can try to bring out more of them that way.
Yeah.
Just because this...
And there is a lot of people that have, like, I would say an average dirty mind, which is enough to go and have a good time and a good laugh with and stuff.
Yeah,
and, until you drop that strange one where everybody's like... Luckily, I'm a nice enough guy, so most people, like, write it off after a bit and think, oh, no, he's not that weird.
There's no mention of putting mint jelly on something. And
No, it's... But, Have you ever had a really inappropriate time where you thought about sex?
Oh, really inappropriate time.
Maybe we shouldn't mention
probably,
this.
Probably have had an inappropriate time, but I just haven't.
Yeah,
I can't recall it.
Well, that's okay. We don't want to put you on a thing. I know I've visited hospitals where I've had relatives or friends that are sick, and I saw, like, doctors or interns that... I'm knowing I shouldn't be fantasizing about having sexual intercourse. God, what am I? Amish? Sexual intercourse!
You're having the coitus.
You know, I'm thinking I should be sending positive energy to the person who's ill. And I'm thinking about, you know, getting a sponge bath or giving a sponge bath.
It's horrible. It's positive energy in its own way.
Yeah. Like, I find dark humor comes out at funerals a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Not sexual, I want to do you on the casket, but just, I think it's nervousness that comes out, and I don't think that's necessarily a dirty mind. I think just people are relieved.
Yeah, they just want to break the tension.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have to do
balls.
Joke.
You just, balls, you know. Death is balls, okay? It sucks that we all have to, like, that's why I don't write a lot of, like, sermons.
Eulogies. Eulogy.
I have done both eulogies for my parents, and they were tasteful. I actually think my dad, I don't know where I get my dirty mind from, but my dad was very open for letting me see stuff like Benny Hill and stuff like that when I was really young. Probably went over my head, but I'm starting to think it might have sunk in earlier.
Well, my parents were very open about life stuff. So, I wasn't really super censored when I was younger. I remember seeing Austin Powers from the theater when I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
All good stuff. I got my experience when I walked in on my parents.
Yeah, we were talking about this, and I didn't want to bring it up, although I thought it would make a great thing. I never had that, and I think this happens to more people than others. Now, you told me it wasn't just missionary that you walked in on. Are you okay to talk about this?
I just remember walking into the room, and there's candles everywhere, and then they're going.
It's romantic.
It's romantic. It's going to town, and then
the
franticness of, oh, our son is in the doorway.
Oh my god.
And then my favorite thing is how they described sexuality to me is that it was when mommies and daddies blow on each other's belly buttons.
Yeah, and that's what you thought it was.
That was
your first girlfriend, admit it. You were blowing on your belly button for the longest time because your parents screwed you up for life.
I swear this is how it works. Yeah, that was in grade 2.
That's a sweet story.
Yeah.
I never walked in on my parents. I don't think they were that close that they actually had sex. I did hear a hand job once. I did. I think it was a hand job. How I know it was a hand job is because I think my mother gives lots of direction, and I just remember when it was done, she was complaining about it all sticky on her hand, and I'm like, please go to sleep. Please go to sleep.
I remember living in the place I was at before I moved out. My grandmother lived with us, and I lived in a little periodic fear that I would walk in on my grandmother.
Oh my god. But you know they had to be. All grandparents had to be goers.
Oh yeah.
I'd like to think so.
My grandma likes to, I swear she's got a more active dating life than I've had. And she's been married a couple times. She has an odd boyfriend here and there.
So you know she's
taking the
wood.
There's a reason she needs that walker.
Sorry, I'll try not to think of your grandma later when you leave.
Oh boy, it's an interesting dynamic there. But she was convinced that one of the delivery guys was hitting on her, and she turns to my mom and goes, "He's cute and all, but you know we don't date younger men." Says the 75-year-old.
I think at 75, and God help it never happens, but if Mike something happens to, I'd date younger. At 75, 30 is younger, right? That's kind of...
Yeah. You can take a whole lot of other things under your wing.
Oh my god, I've lost all track of my thought process here, what you're saying. I know, there are weird situations that some people don't worry about that. Why am I sharing this? But the other day I was talking to Mike, and I'm surprised Mike's got a dark sense of humor, but not in my realm. And I remember seeing a heartthrob when I was a younger person, and I thought, oh my god, I thought he was so dreamy. And they have a son now that I think is hot. And I'm like, oh my god, I'm multi-aging,
multi-generational
now. They'll have, I think Clint Eastwood. And he's got a really hot son, Scott Eastwood, now. And I'm thinking, oh my god, I'm now moving into the generations. But as I get older, everything kind of turns me on. Anything, just anything.
I think it's just you got to be comfortable with sexuality. It's such a hot button topic for a lot of people. A lot of people are.
I hate that our society is more comfortable with violence.
Yes.
Where in Europe, they're more comfortable with sexuality.
Sexuality.
And violence is more we should be. But I hate that we're desensitized from violence.
Yeah.
And now we have generations of kids that you are mentioned sex, and they're almost that's unheard of.
But you show somebody getting a machete to the forehead, and it's oh yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but we could probably find the dirty aspect of that too. Give me a machete. Anyhow, if you do have a dirty mind, you can contact Josh and Devlin. We are going to have, like, a support group. Actually, we're just going to sit around and talk dirty.
Yeah.
But we should start a club or something like that for people who think that they might be past the 65% that you're allowed to say.
The Dirty Debate Club.
Well, Josh, I had a great time. You're so easy to talk to.
Thank you for having me.
We've done this a million times, but it's nice to have a microphone.
We'll do it a million more.
Please come back when you get a chance.
Whenever you can.
Tell us your teaching stories.
That there will be stories.
There will be stories. Well, I had a great time. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you very soon.
Cheers.
My feelings for nothing came back at noon, and just maybe.